Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Keely Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Classic City Sports. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard, Jonathan Williams, got another action-packed episode for you, as always, on the network here. NFL Draft wrapped up this past weekend, so we got some stuff to cover there. Transfer portal just closed, got some stuff to cover there, as you can see in the title up there as well. And then yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I can't remember, time runs together, the college football playoff format and dates were set for next year, not the season that we're coming up on, but the 2024 season. So we get one more year at four teams, and then it's expanding to 12. And so we've got all of that to cover. Jonathan, let's get going.
Well, let's start off with the NFL draft. I guess it's actually the oldest news that we'll be covering technically, since everything else happened more recent. But the NFL draft happened last weekend. And it's another story of Georgia dominating the NFL draft. I shouldn't say dominating, but it's another strong showing. You know, three first-round picks, 10 overall. And you had the Philadelphia Eagles selecting Georgia players like nobody's business, even trading for DeAndre Swift in the middle of the draft. So just racking up the dogs. They got Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, and then Keely Ringo. And then, of course, like I said, they got Swift. So it's packed full of dogs over there. You got N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis on the roster as well. And my initial thoughts on that is, I know how much Atlanta Falcons fans wanted them to take Jalen Carter with their eighth overall pick because he was available. But I honestly can't think of a better place for Jalen Carter to have ended up than in Philadelphia, because he's surrounded by his bros. He's surrounded by his guys. He's, like I said, he's got his teammates there, guys that he has played with, guys that he's familiar with. And then on top of that, they've got veteran guys already in there like Fletcher Cox, but Fletcher Cox is also near the end of his contract. So Carter gets that year of being under a guy like a veteran of Cox, but then he also can just merge into that starting role and kind of be the headliner of that group alongside of his other guys. And so when you get that cohesiveness that you have, and it's funny because it's like, geez, it's almost hilarious that Philadelphia drafted the way that they did. Like at some points it's like, all right, this is just getting ridiculous, because you knew it was, they were being so intentional about it. But at the same time, why would you not want to do that? You're talking about the most historic college football defense ever. And so why not draft all of those guys and put them on your defense? You're a Super Bowl contender, and you just got arguably the best player in the draft and two other really highly tested players as well. So, I mean, heck, if it worked for Georgia, why wouldn't it work for you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hey, it's a good method. I mean, and when we sit here and talk about that 2021 Georgia defense, right? Like, that was one of the best, if not the best, in college football history. And they're just going to piece it all back together one by one between last year's draft and this year's draft. They have most of that front seven at this point from that year, right? Like, they've got their D-line's got a couple guys at this point, or three guys, right, on the defensive line. And then you've got a couple linebackers mixed in there. And then you get the corner. So they've got most of that front seven. And when you look at like football in general, there's so much of it that, I mean, obviously you need the best physical athletes, right? Like, you need really good athletes. You need guys that are going to be able to win their one-on-ones and all that kind of stuff. But the other part of football in general is the cohesiveness and the ability to work off each other and know, I know that he's going to have his gap right here, so I can stay true to mine and not worry about having to help him or something like that, or just knowing what the other player next to you or behind you is capable of doing. And that's what that's what the Eagles are really, really getting by drafting so many Georgia football players that played together on those 21 and 22 teams, because they are so used. They've been around each other for years. They'll be side by side in the trenches. They know what to do together. They know what each other is capable of doing without having to really learn each other at the same time as having to learn a brand new system and a brand new playbook, all that kind of stuff. It makes it a little bit easier for them to, in my opinion, plug and play, because they will be able to work together a little bit better than somebody that, you know, they've never met before, they've never played with before, that kind of thing. So I it's not a bad strategy. Would it work for everybody? No, I mean, probably not. And would you be able to do that with like next year's draft again with Georgia? I mean, you might be able to pull some more players and add to that existing team, but at that point, you're going to start getting to where maybe they didn't really play as much together, or they didn't have as much of that bond that they did. But also, if you look back to 2021 with Georgia, so much came out of that room. You know, when Nolan and N'Kobe and them were sitting down, I think they were getting, N'Kobe was being interviewed at one point, and he was talking about like how just tight-knit that group was, like how they wanted to spend outside of playing football, they wanted to be around each other, they wanted to hang out, they were spending their free time together.
I think N'Kobe was with Nolan when he got drafted.
N'Kobe, and I thought Jordan might have been there, somebody else was there too. Yeah. A couple players that were there with him when it happened. So it's one of those things, man, that they're a very tight-knit group. They are friends, like they are genuinely friends, and you're getting that as well as a really good football player, somebody that is going to be able to perform at the next level very, very well. So I think, I mean, their strategy, it worked out very well for them. The Steelers, you know, they started drafting some Georgia players as well. They've got three on their roster right now from the same time frame. So, I mean, it's going to work out for that defense in Philly. We're also talking about a team that last year, until like the Super Bowl, I'm pretty sure, they were only allowing 7 points defensively. So it's a very good defense already. They've got very good schemes. They have very good players already in place. And you add all of these guys with it, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare for opposing teams seeing that front.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you got your franchise quarterback locked up and Jalen Hurts, and you got him with A.J. Brown. You got a DeAndre Swift now in the backfield. So, I mean, they're loaded down on both sides of the football. So you've got the offense figured out, and you've got the defense figured out. But not only do you have the defense figured out, you've got young guys on the roster that are going to carry you through the next 3 to 4 years and be some anchors for your team. So Philadelphia looks like they're going to continue to be contending for Super Bowls. I thought some other good landing spots honestly some surprises as well throughout the NFL draft. For starters, I thought Robert Beal going to the San Francisco 49ers was a great place for him.
Yeah.
They've been really good with his position specifically. You know, you got Bosa out in San Francisco. They've always had a really solid defense out there, and now you're adding Robert Beal. And the 49ers GMs explicitly said that all they're wanting Robert Beal to do is get after the quarterback and disrupt the defensive line. He's not going to have to drop back in coverage like Georgia asked their outside linebackers to do every now and then. They were even asking Nolan Smith to do that when he was in the game. They just want him to get after the quarterback, be you, use your size, use your speed, and do what you do best. So that's a great landing spot for him. I was surprised, though, with how far Kenny McIntosh fell in the draft. I mean, you and I sat here last week, and we were saying, like, this could very easily be a very early mid-round draft pick. Like, that's kind of the thought process that you
and I had. It could have gone round two, and we wouldn't have been surprised.
No, just because of his skill set. You know, he showed his versatility at Georgia. He became the first ever Georgia running back to go from 800-plus rushing yards and 500-plus receiving yards in a season. It's never been done before at Georgia, but Kenny McIntosh became the first. And he showed that, and he blossomed in his role, and he did a really good job at it. And so you kind of thought that NFL teams would be all over that. I think his 40 time hurt him a little bit. But, you know, I don't know if you saw it, but there was they shared the phone call that Kenny McIntosh and
I heard that.
Really emotional. And
if you haven't heard that, you need to go look that up, because you can hear it in his voice.
Yeah. I mean, just really emotional. And you could tell that he kind of felt a little bit disrespected. And he even said that, you know, even during my time at Georgia, I had to overcome some adversity there, and people kind of disrespected me then as well. Yeah. So it's a guy that's kind of used to that situation, and I think he's going to do really well out in Seattle. I think that's a great place for him. Kind of an up and coming team. They're kind of figuring things out a little bit, a young roster. You know, they've had some setbacks over the year, but they built up some draft picks after trading away Russell Wilson, and now they're utilizing those, and they're really beefing up that roster. So I think that's a good spot for him. Another one, and the last one I'm going to say, Stetson Bennett going to the Los Angeles Rams. I know that, like, it seems like Stetson Bennett would be the perfect just kind of backup quarterback. You know, you go like a Chad Henne, just go out through your career. You're going to be the backup wherever you go. But honestly, they used the fourth round pick on him. Matthew Stafford is the starter right now in Los Angeles. And Matthew Stafford ain't got a whole lot of juice left in the tank, Stoddard. It's not like this is he's still young and springy in his career. This is a guy that's on the tail end of his career. Yeah. He has an elbow injury that's kind of taking a toll on him right now. So honestly, Stetson very well might get some playing time early into his career. And I think it's a great place for him to be because, again, it's a former Georgia quarterback, a really good quarterback, a guy that's been in the league for forever, has had a lot of success, won a Super Bowl. And I know that the Rams are kind of on a downward spiral in a sense, you know, compared to where they were.
They had a rough year last year. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they're kind of clearing out cap space right now. But it might be a good spot for Stetson in two or so more years when, hey, now we're back on the rise. And who knows? Stetson Bennett very well might get a legitimate crack at becoming a starting quarterback in the NFL. And, of course, Sean McVay is an offensive genius in itself. So good spot for Bennett.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when it happened, you and I were talking about it and we were texting back and forth. And I said, and after maybe it was like maybe 30, 45 minutes later, something like that. And I started really thinking about, I was like, man, yeah, it's cool that he gets to go play with Stafford. But I started really processing the situation that he gets to walk into. And I text you this. I said, I don't know that there was a better scenario for him to get drafted, like a better team to draft him, a better scenario for him to walk into as a young like a new quarterback in the NFL, that's obviously not going to be a starter right away, right? Like, so unless you go to one of those couple of teams that are looking to draft a starter immediately, like, you know, the first couple picks in the draft, outside of that, you're expected to come be a backup quarterback, at least to begin with, for the most part. And it's really competitive. It's really hard to be able to lock in a good spot and really learn, right? So step one, when you're in that type of situation, is to find a veteran quarterback that you get to play behind. That's a good veteran quarterback, right? Like an MVP type caliber quarterback at some point in time. And that's what you get with Matthew Stafford in front of you. So you get to sit back and learn from him. Like you mentioned a second ago, you get to go play with somebody that played at your alma mater that you shared a hug with and took a picture with after the national championship game in SoFi Stadium, right? Like he greeted you back behind, like in the, before you were in the locker room and stuff like that. He greeted you. Y'all took a picture, y'all talked for a second, all that kind of stuff. So he likes you. So now you get a guy that is a veteran who's on their way out of the NFL because he's getting towards the end of his career. He's not threatened by you taking a starting job like right away. And he wants to help you. You know Stafford wants to help Stetson Bennett grow in the NFL and actually mature and be able to absorb as much as possible. He's going to bounce stuff off of him. That's somebody that he can go to and ask questions to, and he's going to get honest, open answers to 100% help him as much as possible. Not like he's, once again, worried he's going to take his job right away. So it can't be much of a better situation for a young quarterback, even if it wasn't Stetson Bennett. Say it was somebody else in a different system, somewhere else like that. As a rookie quarterback that's not expected to start day one, this is a prime spot for you. The way that it lined up for him, having somebody that's going to be so willing to help you and learn from, like, that's why, like, when young quarterbacks get drafted, like, think about like Jordan Love, right? He got drafted and he got to play behind Aaron Rodgers, but I don't know that relationship was so good. I don't know that he wanted to help him, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, he was trying to take his job immediately, kind of thing.
I mean, just go back to last year. There was even some tension between Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. You know, the Titans took Malik Willis last year in the draft, and then Ryan Tannehill comes out here with these comments that's kind of like, I ain't going to help him out. Like, I'm trying to keep my own job.
Yep.
And he is here to take my job, essentially. When you take a quarterback that early in the draft, like, that is saying, like, we are preparing him to essentially probably take your job at some point. So it's like, I ain't going to help him out. He can figure it out on his own. So it's not always like that. You're right. It's not always, you don't always walk into a room.
It's not an inviting your peers. Environment. You're not welcome in that environment sometimes, and he will be welcomed with open arms like that. You know that. So it's a perfect spot for him. I couldn't be happier for Stetson. Going in the fourth round didn't surprise us. You know, I think I came on here last week and I said I could see him going as high as the third round. Didn't necessarily expect him to go in the third round because there was a lot of talk about him falling maybe to the fifth, sixth round even. But as far as talent level and what he could have done, he could have gone as high as the third round. I think fourth round to the Rams, perfect spot for him. Going back to what you said a second ago too about Kenny is one of those guys that, like, I think he's going to completely blow away the NFL, and he's coming back as a seventh round draft pick, right? Like mid seventh round draft pick. And he gets to go into there and compete for the starting job right away. He has the chance to be the Isaiah Pacheco from last year, who was a seventh round draft pick. And guess what? He was like rookie of the years and stuff. Like he blew it away in Kansas City. Yeah.
He has the opportunity. Super Bowl winning team.
He was a huge piece of that Super Bowl winning team. And so he has the opportunity to go in there and have that type of performance because he is that type of player, that skillful of a player that just happened to fall that far in the draft. I don't know exactly what the answer was for it. Like you said, maybe it was his 40 time. They were kind of, you know, worried about that. But he's the Swiss Army knife type running back. He's your Christian McCaffrey type running back that'll go out there. He's going to make plenty of plays out of the backfield by catching the ball. He can run any type of, you know, assignment that you want him to from behind you as well. And I think that's such a good scenario for him as well. He has the chance to come on scene and just completely blow people away and be like, how? I guarantee you this time next year, you know, it, looking back or at the end of next season, everyone's going to go, and this man was drafted in what round? That's what I expect from him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of Georgia's players found some great homes, great scenarios. I think Darnell and Broderick being with Mike Tomlin and the Steelers along with George Pickens, that's a great spot for them. You know, kind of the offensive side of what the Eagles are doing. Yeah. It seems like Pittsburgh is starting to ramp up on picking up Georgia's offensive players. And so good spot for them. Another great weekend. It's one of the only rare – or not only. It's one of the rare times where you kind of enjoy seeing players go because you know that they're going towards something bigger and something that has been – their dream from like day one to now. Like that's what they've been working toward. So it's always great to see those guys complete their lifelong goals and really get to see those dreams come true. But on the other hand, as you stated before earlier in the episode, and you guys see it on the title, the transfer portal, the second window of the transfer portal closed. So it opened after spring scrimmages, actually opened up the day of Georgia's spring scrimmage. And then this past weekend, it closed once again. And Georgia is doing something that is absolutely unheard of when it comes to the transfer portal. And I'm just going to kind of lay the land here a little bit because Georgia's roster retention over the past few seasons might be the most impressive thing that they have accomplished. Yes, I know. Georgia went back-to-back national titles. They won an SEC title last year. It still might be the most impressive thing that they have accomplished over recent memory. In an era of college football where kids are getting NIL deals tossed around, opportunity for new opportunities is at an all-time premium, and tampering is at a constant occurrence despite, you know, what the rules say, what the NCAA says. Georgia has been able to hold on to these big-time names time and time again somehow. Brock Vandegrift is the latest example of this, and he isn't the only example, but let's just talk about his case for a second, Stoddard. A former five-star quarterback spending 3 years on the bench as a third-string quarterback is unheard of in today's era of college football. Now he's about to spend another season as a backup because, as we've said on this show, Carson Beck seemingly locked up that starting position after G-Day. We know that Carson Beck looks like to be QB1 heading into this next season. Certainly tells a lot about Brock Vandegrift's character, the fact that he's sticking around once again. Came out and said it. I'm going to be here for the 2023 season. I'm sticking around. I'm going to be a Bulldog. That's shocking. You don't see that in today's era of college football. Carson Beck is another example of this in its own because we know the story of Carson Beck. He sat behind Stetson Bennett. He has waited his turn. Looked like he might get a shot against UAB. That didn't happen. He's rode the bench, but yet he's still here. And then you go to Georgia's defensive back room, which consists of Kamari Lassiter, Dalen Everett, Nyland Green, A.J. Harris, Smoke Bowie, and Julian Humphrey. Not a single one of those names enter the transfer portal.
Yep.
And there's only one spot available. We know Kamari Lassiter has the other spot. All these other names, high-caliber athletes coming out of high school, yet none of them enter the transfer portal. Not a single one. Yet it doesn't make any sense. In fact, they even added a player this offseason in Smoke Bowie from A&M. So not only did they not really lose anybody, they added more bodies into that room. So I don't know about you, Stoddard, but that absolutely blows my mind about how Kirby Smart has managed to maintain players on his roster and in a time of college football where everybody's just bouncing around, all willy-nilly. Yet nobody is at Georgia. Guys are staying, and big-time names are staying.
Yeah, I'd say you're keeping most of your big-time names. I mean, the only big-time name that left this year for Georgia is Bear Alexander. And after all that happened, we've obviously seen everything that started to come out of it. It sounds like it was one that was, we'll call it a mutual departure, where I think Georgia was, you know, opening the door and he was, you know, on his way out because he wanted to go. And it is what it is. When that stuff happens, good luck to you. Do what you're going to do. You know, but outside of him, no other big name player left this year from Georgia. And like you just talked about, that defensive back room was one that we were watching super close, because you've got guys that have been sitting there for a while. You know, I think we talked about it one time before with what was his name? I just blanked. Cornerback. Nylon Green. Thank you. My brain just it's been a long day.
I got you, bro.
Nylon Green. And like, I think I talked about him in the spring saying, like before the spring game, saying, I think this is a make or break moment for him. Like, can he come in here? He's been on the roster for a few years now.
He's been a special teams warrior, and that's about it.
Yeah. Can he, you know, I kind of expected him to potentially enter the transfer portal if he didn't gain some traction there. And I'm not saying he didn't. Maybe he did gain some traction. That's the thing, is I feel like it was a huge moment for him. But with that much competition in the room, either he gained a lot of traction, or he, like Kirby Smart, is just the most elite convincer of saying, hey, I understand that it's a tight room right now, but I think you should stay. And this is why. And actually get him to stay. I think it's insane.
I think it's almost just that. Like, when players come to Georgia, they just adapt the same mentality that Kirby Smart has. Because, Kirby Smart is obsessed with winning. He's obsessed with success. He's obsessed with being perfect. And I don't know that you'll ever reach perfect, even though they went 15-0 and you destroyed TCU in the national championship game. I don't even know if that classifies as perfection for Kirby Smart. So he's always chasing after something. He's always going after something. And I think these players, and even the coaching staff, you can see it in the coaching staff as well, they adapt that mindset of, I'm here to compete. I'm addicted to competition. I'm addicted to winning, and that's what I want to do. And I think that's part of the reason why they stick around, because that's the only thing that I can come up. Because, I mean, just listen to these numbers. Colorado, 56. Ole Miss, 33. A&M, 31. Arkansas, 29. Florida, 26. That's the number of transfers those programs have had from 2022 to 2023. Georgia has had 44 transfers from 2021 to 2023. 44 total in basically 3 years. Yet all these other schools like Colorado and Ole Miss and A&M have almost over that in just a single calendar year. The dogs are hanging Colorado, on players like Florida fans.
Yeah, Colorado's got, what, 55 players that have hit the portal already?
56.
56 players that have hit the portal already this year.
That's more insane. Than half your daggum roster.
At one point, I think they I saw something that said they had like 20 scholarship players left or something like that. It was some ridiculous number, and you have 85 on your roster. So it's crazy how many people were leaving. And he's bringing a lot of guys in. So we'll see how it goes for him in that aspect. But anyways, like when you're able to keep all of these key pieces in, another thing that's going to be fun to watch as it all develops, because you brought up the quarterback situation at Georgia a minute ago. When you look at a guy like Brock Vandegrift too, so it was a five-star. He was committed to Oklahoma, decides to come to Georgia, sits behind everybody like you just talked about, right? And he comes out before the everything is done and before the portal's closed, and he comes out saying, hey, guys, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be here for the 2023 season. And guess what? I believe he graduates in December. If I'm remembering correctly, he graduates in December. So it'll be a huge decision point for him. Because let's play this scenario out real quick. You get Carson Beck as a one-and-done player. He's gone. Do they manage to keep and actually get to play Brock Vandegrift at that point? Or does he, you know, look somewhere else because, you know, we still got Gunnar Stockton on your roster. You still got you might have Dylan Raiola coming in. That quarterback room is going to be very competitive
Ryan
once again.
Ryan Puglisi is currently committed. So you're adding possibly two new names into the QB room after this next season.
So you'll have all those, and they're young, and it's one of those things at Georgia that I don't expect to see one of the freshman quarterbacks come in and start. So I feel like next season it would come down to Brock Vandegrift or Gunnar Stockton. And obviously he would be in the system for so many years, he would probably have the advantage and the lead going into it. That's when I'm going to really get interested in seeing what happens, because if all of that plays out that way, and Stetson Bennett was here for a couple years as a starter, walks away with two national championships, we managed to keep Carson Beck happy and Vandegrift happy for this long. Carson Beck gets to come in, has a crazy year, throws for, you know, maybe 35 to 100 yards to 4,000 yards, and gets drafted early in the, you know, round. He's built for the NFL. He would go very high if he did exactly what Stetson Bennett did this year, and maybe a couple more touchdown passes. He would go in the first round of the draft next year. So say that happens. If Kirby Smart is able to manage all of those quarterbacks and then potentially have Brock Vandegrift be his next starting quarterback after sitting for that long, how wild would that be?
It'd be insane. As I said, it's unheard of. It's unheard of that you have three highly touted recruited quarterbacks on your roster for more than two seasons. Heck, even more than one season in most cases. You know, like I said, new opportunity is at a premium. Opportunity for new opportunity is at a premium in college sports right now because of the transfer portal. You know,
yeah.
Hey, if I ain't getting a good look right now, if I ain't getting any ones reps at all, if I ain't even getting sniffed at for a starting spot, see ya. I'll go somewhere else. I can find me a coach that will give me some opportunity. Colorado's got lots of spots looking for players. I could very well be one of them. Bear Alexander said it himself. I want to go to USC and I want to be the guy on their defense. I want to be one of the ones that kind of revamps his defense under Lincoln Riley. And I want to go out there and be a key piece to that defense. But I think that even kind of plays more into the, like, how baffling it is that Kirby Smart and his staff continue to keep and maintain these players. Because, you know, while Georgia does have key pieces to their defenses, you know, like a Jalen Carter, a Jordan Davis, and a Kobe Dean, a Christopher Smith, a Keely Ringo, those types of players, it isn't like they just have one guy out there dominating and it's just the centerfold headliner of them all. I mean, they have multiple of them, but they also rotate a lot. So it's not like
the definition of a team effort on that Georgia defense.
It is. Exactly. That's what it is. It is a team defense. They play like a team. There is no selfishness on that team or on that defense specifically. And so it goes back to my thing of, like, these players buy into what they are preaching at Georgia, and they love it. They're addicted to it. They're attracted to it. And that's where they want to be. And it's so hard to leave because there's so many players on Georgia's roster, so many players that could be starters at a lot of schools. And yet they continue to be content, it seems like, with riding the bench. And it doesn't even feel like that a lot of them even flirt with hitting the transfer portal.
Right.
It's just kind of like, we're here, man. I'm in Athens. I'm a dog. I'm going to keep running these natties. I want to win. I want to be with a successful program because I know Kirby Smart has the ability to make me a first-round pick in the future or get me to the NFL in the future because he's had 25 players drafted in the last 2 years, and he's had 55 total since he first became a head coach. I mean, that's the bottom line of it is Kirby Smart has proof of concept, and these players, I mean, why wouldn't you buy into something like that? If the end result is the NFL to go get that millions of dollars on a check, then why wouldn't you stay at Georgia and get your shot? Because you might just need one season to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the key to that, that will probably make a good argument for a guy like say, Brock Vandegrift next year is, if Carson Beck can be plugged into this system and play one really good year, that's the best argument for Georgia to continue to maintain that quarterback room the same way and say, hey, he's gone. He's going to go get drafted probably in the first, second round, something like that. I can do the same with you. Give me it's your team. I'm giving you the keys. Like, and then he'll come out to the media and he'll say, we got a quarterback competition with these players and everything like that. But behind the scenes, it's one guy's at least leading and has the opportunity. It's their job to lose, basically. And I think that's what the situation that Carson Beck was handed this year. It's his job to lose, and he didn't lose it. He didn't give way in practice. He came out and continued to ball out like he wanted to. And it gives, you know, Brock Vandegrift a little bit more time to learn. If he is a little bit behind the curve behind Carson Beck right now, it gives him another year. Think about it. Like, Carson Beck did an interview with Aaron Murray a week or two ago, and he was being asked questions about everything. And he came out and said 2 years ago, that year that Stetson took over at UAB, he said, I wasn't ready that year. He said, I wasn't ready to play. I wasn't ready to run this offense and do it. He said, the next year, I think I was ready. But at that point, Stetson just won a national championship, came back, and he had control of the offense at that point. I don't know where Brock Vandegrift is. He probably thinks he's ready at this point, I would assume as well. But he gets to learn a little bit longer before he gets to jump in. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I think making the argument for him will be Carson Beck this year. If he does what he's likely going to do and able to go as high as he's going to go, I think you're in prime spot right there. But, I mean, the transfer portal is the way of college football right now. Kirby Smart continues to go against the grain and stop it and do as well as he can possibly do, a lot better than a lot of other teams. So that's one other thing for Georgia fans to be super grateful for. So we get to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I mean, they get national attention. They get to play for national championships. They get to basically run the SEC East every single year. You know you're going to win big-time football games during your 4 or 3 years at the University of Georgia. And they're only going to get bigger here in the near future as the college football playoff will be expanding, not this season, but the next season. And they went ahead and released the schedule, Stoddard. And I have a lot. I continue to just have more and more questions about how all this is going to work and how it's going to shake out and how it is going to look when it happens. Because if you're a first round playoff team, like based on how they release this schedule, if you're a first round college football playoff team, you start your playoff run on December 19th. The championship game in 2024 is played on January 20th. So you have a full another month of football, which I know, like, I know that you basically already had another full month if you made it to the final four in the college football playoff, but that's a lot fewer games that you are playing in a final four.
You got a month to prepare and a month to do it. Now you have the same time frame basically, but you have to physically play games, you know, every week or two leading up to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot more football. So specifically for those teams that are first round team, and this is my whole question, you know, the whole reason that they decided to do this, while the College Football Playoff Committee decided to expand it to 12 teams and add more teams in the mix, is to give those other programs a legitimate shot at winning a national title. You know, that's the whole reason they wanted to add more competition. They wanted to shake things up a little bit and put more teams into the mix. But let's be real. I mean, that is going to be a grind for the next month. That's a lot of preparation you're going to have to do for multiple teams, like three or four teams within a month, and the biggest games of your life as a collegiate athlete, and you're going to have to grind that. And when I say it's a grind, I mean, it's going to take a lot of players, and that's a lot of toll that's going to be put on those athletes' bodies. And I know we joke around and say, like, oh, for Georgia, like, just put in another five-star when someone gets hurt. It's like, just put in another five-star. And there,
you can only do it so many times, man.
There's a truth to that, though, at Georgia. You know, Georgia has the depth. Alabama has the depth. Ohio State. Because those schools perennially recruit at a high level.
I don't know. I don't know if those two schools have the depth. They sure as crap made arguments. They sure as crap made arguments as if they didn't have that depth. That's all I'm going to say.
You get what I'm saying.
If they have the depth.
Those teams are getting blue chip guys in every single class. They are getting those high caliber athletes every single year. So they have more depth compared to a school like TCU or a school like, I don't know, like North Carolina or a school like, heck, I mean, even a school like USC, they have more depth than those guys. And so for those schools, like if you have to, now it might get a little shaky when you get down to the third spot on the depth chart, but it looks a whole lot better than some other school's third piece on the depth chart.
Think about teams like TCU in the playoffs this year, right? If they lose a couple, they had a couple like Quentin Johnston, you know, and Max Duggan. If those guys go down, they're in some deep trouble. You know what I mean? Like if they had to play a couple more games and they lose one of those pieces with their roster not being the same, like you said, they haven't built it up over the years. Maybe they'll start doing a little bit better in recruiting because they got to the national championship game. That's great for them, right? But if they were to lose a couple of key pieces, it's detrimental for them.
Yeah, so it's like a cliff for a lot of teams, whereas for schools like Georgia, it's kind of like a slope, and then it goes to the drop-off. You know, it kind of gradually drops off into the deep end, where other schools, it's like, we lose our top guy, we're toast. Like, we're done. That's our roster. That's our guy. If we lose him, we're done. I know you can say that for a lot of teams and probably most college football teams, but I think in this scenario, it's like, that is a grind for like these teams. These are specifically the teams that you wanted to give a chance to, the guys that are kind of on the outside, like maybe ranked eighth when December rolls around or ranked number nine. These are the pillar. These are the teams that you are wanting to give a chance, but those are also the teams that I don't know if they are built to make that type of grind and go through that type of schedule in a month. I don't see it. And that's why I'm interested to watch it happen and see if this really shakes out the way that they think it will, because I have a hard time envisioning the way that they envision this to happen.
Yeah, I do too. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out overall, just in like looking at the format of it, right? So like the first game, there's going to be one game. It's a Friday night on December 20th. It's one game. And then Saturday, the 21st, you're going to get three games. So they're mixing all that in. It's obviously TV stuff, right? Like they've got to mix everything into it. It's going to be really awkward as far as deal. Because think about the other thing that you're dealing with now for a couple extra weeks in January is dealing with the NFL schedule and where they start playing playoff games on Saturdays. That's why the national championship game is never on Saturday, because the college or the NFL playoffs and stuff or late season starting and they play games on Saturdays and Sundays all of a sudden. So for college football, they get thrown midweek in this stuff, right? So you get a Friday night game. You're going to have three Saturday games for the first round. Second round is going to be a Tuesday game on December 31st and a Wednesday game on January 1st. I mean, so you're playing on Tuesdays and Wednesdays in this scenario. We got midweek stuff. Let's think about the fan perspective. How many fans are going to be able to do this kind of stuff middle of their Monday? Monday was bad enough, right? Like you had to deal with that. But like Wednesday, I mean, that's dead center of your work week and everything. And that was the quarterfinals. Then you get the semifinals where you're going to have a Thursday night game, January 9th, and then a Friday, January 10th game. And then,
which is typically when the national championship is played.
Yeah, that week. Yeah. And then 10 days later, you get the national championship game on a Monday night, which is normal. And it is in Mercedes-Benz Stadium again that year, by the way. So Georgia fans, if that, at least it's easy for us, right? Like if it's right there, that's not too bad. But this is also 2024. So we'll see how it all plays out. The cool thing is that there will be home playoff games for the first, you know, first round. The first eight teams there, obviously the top four teams are getting the bye week, and then those eight teams are going to get to, you know, four of those teams get to have a home game. So it'll be kind of cool to see that playoff atmosphere
really
on
cool.
campus. I think that's the exciting part about what we're going to get. I'm going to try to pull the positive away here, and that's it for me. You get that. And then after that, they start creeping into the bowl games where they get the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Sugar Bowl and Rose Bowl are all the quarterfinals, and then the Orange Bowl and Cotton Bowl are the semifinals, and then obviously Mercedes-Benz championship game. So they're still doing the bowl games like they need to, because you obviously know they had those contracts and everything like that. They had to squeeze all that in. But to compensate without, you know, taking more other bowl games and stuff away, they gave those home playoff games. That part I am kind of excited to see.
Yeah, I am.
Those environments are going
to
be crazy.
Like. Yeah, I don't know that Georgia will ever be in that situation where they're that far back in the rankings when the college football playoff is released. Maybe they are. You know, it might happen eventually. But as of right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon to where they're in like a first round playoff game. But it would be really cool to see Athens in a playoff environment, because you've never seen it before. Nobody has ever seen that before on the college football landscape of things. You never have gotten to see what a playoff environment in college football looks like in a home environment. And I think it'd be really cool to see what Sanford Stadium would look like in that type of scene. Heck, even like Ohio State or Michigan, like those big stadiums, Tennessee, where it's just packed in tight. It'd be the biggest game of those programs' history ever on that field.
Let's talk about the odds of it, right? Like like you said, it's, you know, probably won't get Georgia in there, but let's be honest, that's not necessarily that accurate if you think about it, because the top four teams, the conference champions are going to get locked into those, right? So if say Georgia doesn't win the SEC and that's their only loss, they're going to fall to a fifth, sixth seed, something like that. And at that point, they are playing that home playoff game. They will be in Sanford Stadium. If they don't win their conference, whoever the SEC champion is, that's who's going to be in that first round bye. And if you come up even one game short, right, you're going to be sitting in that, having to play that extra game, and then you're going to have, but at least you get the home field kind of thing.
Yeah. I am going to pull another negative out of this, but it's a selfish negative, is that now with the national champion, which it doesn't even affect me, so I don't know why I'm even necessarily complaining about it, because I'll be graduated by the time this happens, is that The good thing about the national championship game when it was, is that Georgia's schedule for classes always started that week. And typically, like the past couple of years when Georgia's been in the national title, teachers have canceled class. They're just kind of like, look, nobody's going to want to be there the day after or the day of, so we're just going to go ahead and cancel it. It's syllabus week. That's all we're doing. So we're just going to kind of scratch it, and we'll start fresh next week. Now you're getting it. Now it's going to be played like in the third week of class. And at that point, you can't just probably cancel class at that point. Teachers, professors aren't going to be willing to.
You might have a test that week. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You could have a test that week already.
There's going to be some professor to do it. I already know it. Someone's going to put a test the day after the national title game. I can already see it. But so that part kind of sucks for the students, because, you know, you had some freedom with where it was over these past couple of years, where now it looks like that's going to be restricted a little bit. And boy, oh boy, we've seen what happens to Athens when Georgia won two national titles. And so it's going to be really rambunctious when everybody's on campus at that point. I mean, everybody is going to be in Athens that is supposed to be in Athens. And so it's probably going to be times 10 that when if and when Georgia does play in a national title game on January 20th or January 19th, was when they're slated for 2024 and 2025. So, but all in all, the conclusion of it all is I'm just excited to see how it looks and what happens, and just kind of, you know, see how things shake out. See if this does indeed add some more competition into it, or see if it doesn't change anything at all. And it, all the naysayers about the expansion could just say, like, we told you so. We told you Georgia and Alabama were going to end up in the national championship game against one another, regardless or whatever. So who knows? I'm going to be optimistic about it. I've been a little closed-minded in over the past couple months about it, but now I'll have some optimism with it.
I mean, we still, like, right now we get like a random team thrown into the four, right? And if you get in there and you play a good game, think about TCU this year. There's no reason they should have been in the playoffs this year, but they had a really good season and they earned their spot. Don't take that the wrong way. They did earn their spot and they deserve to be there. So even in the current format, you get that kind of stuff right now. And I'm just, it'll be a situation like that, right? It'll be a TCU or somebody that that gets in and people will be making the same type of comment. Like, see, I told you so. Look who gets to be in the, you know, in the semifinals now or something like that. And unless, what I'm going to sit here and tell you is, unless those teams are like eight or back, then it's not really a relevant comment, because I think in years past, you know, in Alabama or Georgia sitting at five, if they got into the playoffs, they could have made a splash and they could have won the thing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like a Texas A&M sat at five a couple years ago, like that kind of stuff. Those teams were good football teams. They just didn't quite get to make the cut. Those are the teams that are going to pop in and still be able to go win it at that point. I don't know that you're going to get many of your, you know, Coastal Carolinas and stuff like that that make the playoffs and end up making a splash. I use that as a reference because a couple years ago they were on the brinks, right? They were right there and then they lost. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I'm not super optimistic, but at the same time, it is what it is. From a Georgia fan perspective, I think we've talked about this before. From a Georgia fan perspective, we're in the playoffs every year.
It only benefits you at that point.
We're in the playoffs every year. You can slip up and lose a regular season game. You could lose two regular season games, and guess what? You could still be in the playoffs.
I am now laughing at the fact of thinking about, like, Georgia, if say Georgia did have to play a first round game and it is Coastal Carolina who they're matched up with in the first round, those poor Coastal Carolina players having to walk into Sanford Stadium for a playoff environment. Like, we've seen what Sanford Stadium does to teams like that on the big stage when it matters most. Kirby Smart asks the fans to show up, and they do every single time. And Georgia, every single time, puts down an absolute beatdown. And it's just a shame that someone like Coastal Carolina or like a Tulsa is going to have to walk into Sanford and just get embarrassed on national television. It's going to be a real tragic event for those guys, but it'll be a fun day for Georgia fans.
Yeah, absolutely going to be a good one there. But overall, they're trying to improve it. We'll see. Like, I've said what I've got to say about the college football playoff overall. At this point, it's happening whether I like it or not. So we're going to sit back and we're going to watch and see how it plays out. And hopefully it brings what people want. You know, I'm not saying I want college football as a product to get worse. I hope it helps. I hope it improves it. You know, at the end of the day, that's what the goal is. Everybody wants a good product and a good football game to watch. I hope we get some more of those. But it is what it is now, right?
Yep, it is what it is. But it still get one more year of the top four format. And
Georgia's about to go through and sweep the last three regular, like, four-team playoff, like, scenarios and win three in a row. And just that's why they're canceling the four-team thing. They're done with Georgia doing it. They want somebody else to
have a shot. They saw it coming. They're like, do y'all see what Kirby Smart's doing down there in Athens? We got to put a stop to this because this Joker's about to go win three in a row. And we're not going to know what to do with them, and nobody's going to be able to stop them. And it's looking like, I mean, again, they're shaping up to legitimately do it and make another run for the national title game. But we're going to keep continuing to talk about Georgia and how they're shaping up for the 2023 season throughout the entire offseason. Big news for next week's episode. I haven't even told Starter this yet. Next week is episode 100 for the Classic City Sports Podcast. We started this thing back in 2020, right before the Peach Bowl against Cincinnati. It was me and Stoddard and another friend of ours, Kyle, who no longer does it with us. But that's where it all started. And yet here we are now, me and Stoddard still rocking with it. And we're about to go on episode 100. It's been a long time. It's been a long time, but it hasn't felt that long. You know, you always
No, it's gone by things. Very fast, yeah.
It has. So episode 100 next week. Show up big for us for that. Come load it up in the comments and chop it up with us. We're going to be talking some Dogs football. We're going to be talking everything good. And so we hope to see you guys next week. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. Continue to support us. You guys have continued to kill that subscribe button and the like button during this offseason, and we continue to grow, and we always appreciate that very much. We appreciate all of you guys that showed up in the comment section. We love you guys. And Stoddard, you can close us out, brother.
As always, keep it classy in the Classic City. We will see you guys next week.
thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime...
To the stewards, which express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.